Blog Talk Radio.
Writing
that would come to me from somewhere. I don't know where exactly. Music that would channel through me, remarkable songs. I didn't know where I received these things, but I understood that it wasn't me fully. It was me playing the songs. It was me creating the stories. It was me. But it wasn't me, you know. It was a hierarchical communication that came to me. And later, through my early 20s, I started to communicate directly with spiritual entities that were, was phenomenal, actually. And whether or not it was God or messengers, I to this day am not certain, but it took me on a path of metaphysical research and mystical revelations that never, you know, started to present themselves to me. And so I didn't, for the last, I'd say, 35 years or more of my life, I've devoted much of my life to metaphysical research and in the sense of spiritual understanding. And it wasn't until I met George Dixon, my good friend, that it started to come together in ways that were more lucid, you know, and books that I borrowed from George that have so opened my mind to so many thoughts, so many concepts, and other people. But the Agni Yoga series was introduced to me by my dear friend Maria Algieri, and it opened my mind to a far, far greater panorama, you know, of my own existence, but also of that of humanity. And as I discussed this again, now this is the fourth, actually, program that I devote to this particular book, The Illumination. But, you know, I did a whole year of, probably 30 or 40 programs surrounding the Agni Yoga back in 2008, I believe. And I want to, and I'm going to do this tonight, a part four of the Illumination. I'll begin the reading, but I want people to understand that I don't know what has propelled me to do this, but it seems like it's a timely thing, and I find myself, as always, being pushed forward into doing certain things. And that my audience, though it may be small or large for these programs, other people are searching for this information as well. And it's up to me, for some reason, to present it. So I'm going to do that again tonight. And I start with part four tonight of the Agni Yoga. And of the leaves of Moria's garden. Book two, The Illumination. It begins this way. Prayer is the realization of eternity. In prayer, there is beauty, love, daring, courage, self-sacrifice, steadfastness and aspiration. But if the prayer are included superstition, fear, and doubt, then such an invocation is related to the times of fetishism. How then should one pray? One can spend hours in aspiration, but there may be a prayer of lightning speed. Then instantaneously, without words, man places himself in continuity with a whole chain into the infinite. Resolving to unite with the infinite, man inhales emanations of the ether, as it were, and without mechanical repetitions establishes the best circuit for the current. Thus in silence, without wasting time, one can receive a stream of refreshment. Only developed spirituality can uplift the human consciousness in a single sigh. But we must repeat our prayer, because people will inquire about it. Needless are conjurations, needless are entreaties, needless is the dust of humbleness, needless are threats, for we alone transport ourselves into the far-off worlds, into the treasuries of possibilities and knowledge. We feel that they are predestined for us, and we approach them daringly. Thus understand the covenant. Pray in no wise but in spirit. So, based on that concept, whenever we meditate, I'm so reluctant to say prayer, and I don't know why. Perhaps it's because I don't want to connect it to the lunatic fringes of Catholicism or Protestantism or religion. But prayer is such an abused word. But in a sense, it is the most remarkable secret to unlocking knowledge, unlocking wisdom, unlocking peace, justice and joy and pleasure. I can't express it in any other terms, because prayer has always been to me a sacred form of meditation that allows me to elevate my present situation into a much higher sphere of understanding, or at least acceptance of where we are. And it says, pray in no wise but in the spirit. So basically, when we pray, don't pray for material benefits. Don't pray for money and, all these things. But pray for enlightenment. Pray for spiritual well-being. Pray for peace. Pray for joy. Pray for love. These spiritual benefits of prayer. Right? And what happens is you find that these incredible things that we pray for in the spirit manifest themselves in the world in our own present life. It says, if we begin to decompose matter, we see that the liberated atoms begin to arrange themselves according to the basic tone and escaping into the ether. They form a rainbow that resounds with the music of the spheres. If an entire planet be decomposed, and indeed the result will be a rainbow. This can be observed in every dissolution of visible matter. Our ray dispatches myriads of purified atoms, which enwrap the man if there is no atom. astral whirlwind around him. This is the reason for the calmness of the spirit, as otherwise the remnants of karma will obscure the object of the sending. The lower spirit ran the ray like monkeys, tearing the precious fabric without any benefit to themselves, because the atoms of matter are useless for restless shells. This must be remembered while uniting the spirit in prayer with the infinite. And this is so important because once we initiate prayer, and prayer not meaning, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, blah, 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 blah. What we're saying is prayer is like, God, give us strength. Give me strength to get through this moment. Give me clarity. Give me peace. Give me joy. Give me love. Give me understanding. And once you embrace that concept of prayer, and what you're doing is you're subjecting yourself to the concept of a superior intelligence, a superior being, far, far beyond what you are, what you can even comprehend. Because in our lives, we are confronted daily with things that we don't understand. We don't know how to get out of. We don't know what. Why are we being obsessed, or not obsessed, but bombarded with these images, with these concepts, with these ideas, with these pressures, with these stresses, through these strange obsessions? Why? And the only reason, the only way we can rid ourselves or make sense of it all is through some form of submission to a higher realm, to a hierarchy, to a higher concept than we are, and saying, please give me the insight, the wisdom to understand this. And that is illumination. That is when we become illuminated into the world of, into the infinite mind of God. Once we understand these concepts, will in turn allow the manifestation of this need that we have to materialize. And from there, it signifies, it solidifies the concept of the miracle within our own lives. I've seen so many miracles in my own life. Right, that I cannot under any circumstances deny the existence of a creator or God, because it would be absolutely foolish, because there's no way that I could have possibly redeemed myself or gotten out of situations that I've been in without the help and aid of higher consciousness. Over the years. So, I want to continue with this. Keep now in mind that in time of danger, you must encircle yourselves with the realization of personal invulnerability. Then send your consciousness to meet my ray. Imagine mentally how your spark rushes to my current. Such reciprocity increases the current and is excellent in time of fatigue. There may be various incidents in the path in which a reciprocal current will be especially useful. It is best to reinforce each possibility. Surrounded and threatened, Abkar addressed his commanders. The less agitated is the substance, the more clear is the reflection of the summons. And after inspecting his army, Abgar said, "A fourth part has been achieved. I have seen satisfied people. The rest we shall see after a day of heat, after a day of rain, after a sleepless night." Now, if you are asked, "Do you recognize astrology?" Answer, "Do you deny medicine?" If you are asked, "Do you insist upon the life of the spirit?" Answer, "Do you deny the development of matter?" If asked, "Why do you care about the dead and gone teachers?" Answer, "Is it possible that science is still inaccessible to you?" If it is said to you, "Apparently you are not averse to reading parchments," reply, "Go back to school. We will talk afterwards." And if you are asked, "How do you picture the universe?" Answer, "As a drop of water." If asked, "Why did you yourself acknowledge the teacher?" Answer, "Because he himself has addressed us for the development of our knowledge." I shall specify the qualities distinctive in those seeking the common good. First, constancy of striving. Second, the ability of containment, for poor is he who denies, but the seeker of truth is worthy to work for general good. Third, ability to labor, because the majority do not know the value of time. Fourth, the desire to help without prejudices and without usurpation. Fifth, renouncement of personal property, and the acceptance for safekeeping of the fruit of the creativeness of others. Sixth, the expulsion of fear. Seventh, the display of vigilance amidst darkness. This must be told to those who possessed by fear shield themselves with denial. One should point grayish twilight of servility has brought on a wretched conception of life. Now this must end in storm and tempest. No clairvoyance is equal to the spirit knowledge. The truth comes through the knowledge. The understanding of the needs of the time comes only by this path. Prophetic ecstasy avoids exactness of time and place, but the knowledge of the spirit foresees the quality of an event. And the way of this straight knowledge comes into bloom without visible signs, but is based upon the opening of the nerve centers. The priest of old considered the spirit knowledge to be the highest manifestation, for it could not be attained by any bodily exercises, but was achieved through the accumulations of former lives. Therefore, the care of the spirit knowledge is expressed not in exercises, but by the improvement of the life conditions of the blood vessels which feed the nerves. Principal attention must be paid to the blood pressure, because when the nerves absorb the emanations of the white blood corpuscles, the opposite polarity especially reacts. People ask, who is greater, Christ or Buddha? Answer, is impossible to measure the far-off worlds. We can only be enraptured by their radiance. The ray of Christ feeds the earth as much as the rainbow of Buddha bears the affirmation of the law of life. The new world will manifest the affirmations of fearless cognition. There, the images of the teachers will enter into life as friends. The decree of the teachers will be upon the self-dedicated to beloved books. In the period of the abolition of money, it is urgent to replace its power by affirmation of the spirit power to help. And knowledge must finally build scientifically the bridge of aspiration toward the spirit. The deplorable conditions of the societies for psychic research must be replaced by fearless and truthful judgment. How can one sit together with hypocrites and liars who excellently guard their pockets? Achievement must be made manifest and freed from the dust of prejudices. Can a respectable man concern himself with an achievement? He has not enough room on his chest to hold all the earthly decorations. He is at a loss, how to uphold all of grandfather's customs. But customs make one customary. Therefore, I urge you to look at the sky as if for the first time. I urge you to view the horror, the filth of cities as if for the first time. I urge you to think about Christ and Buddha as if for the first time. I urge you to look at yourself as if for the first time. I urge you to picture the new world as if for the first time. And the least particle of personal property of bygone days is like a millstone around one's neck. Unexpectedness is the sister of mobility. Mobility is the sister of achievement. Achievement is the brother of victory. And for each achievement contains within itself a victory. Perhaps an individual one, but one moving profound expanses. And I think at that point we must comprehend the victories, our victories, whatever they may be, you know, small or large. I consider it like a victory if one person is listening to this program. I consider it a victory that if people would go, because of what I say, what I'm doing, people will refer to the Agni Yoga series and the Leaves of Moria's Garden and read the entire book, all of the books, and be inspired by them. You know, that is a victory. And I see a victory as my own understanding of some of these works, even though I've read them before, as they come to me in waves of tsunamis of understanding, just overwhelming me by their wisdom, and crashing on me, flooding me, drowning me in these thoughts that might end my dependence on physical existence and rise me to the level of cognitive understanding of the spiritual world. I mean, this to me is far, far, far greater than any monetary, any physical, any third dimensional, any material gains that could possibly derive from this. So, and perhaps this is why I've been chosen to explain this in my own way. I don't know. But all I know is that whenever I do this, whenever I read this, whenever I present this, it's not from me. It's from an urgency. It's from a pressure within me. It's from an overwhelming urge that I have to present this material, and I don't know why exactly. But not only am I learning from it, but I'm in some way teaching it. But I don't believe so that I teach it in as much as that it teaches itself. Words, as long as I can present the words, then and my own feelings toward them, then perhaps other people will identify with that same concept and will identify with the words totally differently than I myself. But nevertheless, because of the multidimensional aspect of this work, what grabs me in one way may grab somebody else in a totally different way and open up their chakras to the, you know, their crown chakras, if you will, and make it and absorb this information in ways that I don't even, I can't even comprehend. So the work in itself is indifferent to the reader. It interprets itself to whoever is listening or whoever is reading differently than anyone else. It's not dogma. It's simply suggestion. It's simply an illumination. It's simply a way to your path, to possibly guide you on your path, knowing that your path is different than my own. And by doing this, we apply no pressure. We apply no dogma. We apply no ego. Okay. We apply no subliminal suggestions. All we are doing is basically reading this information and interpreting it in our way, and then from you, or from me, you grasp it and go from there. What suffers most of all, of course, co-measurement. I have spoken so much about it, yet again it is necessary to return to the old theme. Even the few who sense the importance of co-measurement remember about it only in some special circumstances. When one is drowning, then the best precepts are called to mind. Far more important is it to remember them amidst everyday life. The smallest thoughts will be borne away by the whirlwind of right judgment. Good or bad, useful or harmful, these will be singled out, because where the big trees are, the shrubs are not seen. If we apply our efforts to change the hustle and bustle into a beautiful achievement, then the gnarled thorn bushes will be transformed at once into a tall grove. If we can rise in thought to the boundaries of the miraculous, then we shall not speak lengthy about a worn-out soul. I strongly advise to abolish gossip. Half the day will then be made free, and there will remain a lonely cup of coffee or glass of beer. The time of meals must be shortened in order to preserve the human aspect. There is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to prattle at a dinner table about trifles. There is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to toss slander like a shower of small peas. There is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to defer an urgent action. And there is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to show offense like a petty huckster. There is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to renounce responsibility. And there is no worse act of non-co-measurement than to cease thinking about beauty. Co-measurement is like the pillar that supports the house. When we take into consideration the painting of the dwelling, are we to destroy the pillar under the archway? Thoroughly assimilate co-measurement. If co-measurement is not observed, then the determination is also destroyed. Our determination is up to the last limit. It is not the determination which precedes comfort and fits in the personal habits. Not that determination which is to the body advantage. Our determination is confined only to the spirit limits. Therefore, it is impossible to bar the way of our striving. Warriors and builders of life proceed with our determination. If timidity retards one, then it is better to burn the bridges already crossed. If avarice hinders, then better to throw the purse over the next river. If stupidity impedes, then better let one's horses go by themselves. If rancor delays, then better hang an effigy of the enemy between the ears of one's horse. Only beauty can promote determination. And to think about the purse and the enemy will seem a child's whim. As the center of magnet attracts toward itself, so the fundamental quality of resoluteness is invincible. Indeed, the invincibility of determination is convincing, and it is an immutable condition of the true mysteries. A true mystery must be regarded as a guiding action of life. Thus, our determination is connected with the leading concept. Put determination into practice. Determination conditions the laws of occult facets. Even a stone is cut in facets to the manifestation of the inner fire. Likewise, the path to the light is divided by clearly discernible lines. Of course, instead of facets, one can always make heaps of broken stones, but this is deplorable. A rational path is divided into periods of about 1,000 days each. 3 years of this period, similar in exterior aspect, completely differ as to the qualities of spiritual consciousness concerned. The sharper the line of distinction, the more comfortable the plane is the path. The plane is the path. Usually the first year of the three-year period is characterized as preparatory. The second is an active one, and the third is a dim and wearisome threshold. Let us begin a new period. It may be called earthly homeliness. One must cast aside all past consideration and rush into a desert of boundless stillness, where thunderstorms and whirlwinds entwine one under a radiant dome. Amid the storms, a new remnant will be woven. Raiment be woven. Let the next period be called the luminous, and thus let us build it. Let us courageously turn the steeds into the haze of the desert. The experience of homeless wandering must be lived through. In like manner have walked all seekers. And one can welcome this period when the boundaries become countries. The boundaries between countries are being erased. That, to me, is rather a difficult passage to truly relate to. Yet, I've done this. You know, I've been homeless. In the sense that I've left my home, I left security just to wander and to go places, and I've been accepted in other places, and I've found rides, and I've found friendship on the road. Back when I was 19, I left my home, hitchhiked to Connecticut. Maine. Simply got on Interstate 1 and put my thumb out there and, found myself getting rides from one place to another. Not really certain where I was headed, but with some idea that was taking me someplace. And that's what I got. When I went to New York and Connecticut and the places that I stopped at on the way, and I found myself attracted to the state of Connecticut. found myself attracted to a specific woman that I knew. I found myself attracted to a particular climate, particular lifestyle. I secured a job. I left that position and started school full time. All different, all strange, and all, I don't know. Would I have done it again? I don't know where my mind would have left me or wanted me to do. But this was something that was always there for me. But it took me over 30 years, 40 years to grasp that part of me and to understand that this is what I wanted to do. This is what I was doing, my writing, my television, radio, all of these things became very important to me and provided me with a platform or forum to present my thoughts and present thoughts of others, and essentially to communicate with the outer world. And, you know, whether I'm successful or not, it's not in my hands, really. It's in the fate of my, it's in the truth of my teaching. It's in the truth of this work. It's in the truth of my beliefs, okay? You know, that whether or not I'm doing something for the benefit of mankind. So, I'll begin there. About occult murder, invisible slayings are incomparably more numerous than the bloody ones. Out of hatred, out of ignorance, out of fear, men plant poison arrows, the force of which is great. One of the best means of defense is the concept of an occult circle. But the best remedy must be taken according to exact indications. The power of the circle is so great that even stellar decrees can be modified. It is known that the circle has shifted sickness and death. Because of its significance, the circle must be guarded like any tuned instrument. One should not forget that every action between members of the circle must be circumvented. Everything useful can be turned into an injury. If there be tolerated the throwing of stones into the brother's orchard, can one know where a foolishly thrown stone will strike? Often the condition of auras deflects the stone, and instead of foot, it strikes the temple. Therefore, it is indispensable to put the stones out of action with all strength to guard the treasure of the circle. I have forewarned. And about the quality of action, it is an action. If an action is small, it needs to be helped. It needs the help of various handmade objects. But when the action becomes great, it can dispense with earthly objects. This is the first touchstone of action. If inaction is small, it needs the help of various handmade objects. When the action becomes great, it can dispense with earthly objects. This is the first touchstone of action. When the magician speaks about a whole pharmacy, it means his action is one of a very small dimension. Second quality of action is the mobility. Like a whirlwind of primary matter, true action must vibrate with possibilities. And only a fight can obtain or human its manifestation. Or humanist manifest thought. Third quality of action is the unexpectedness. Reaction which has announced the minds of the people was the result of an unexpected way of thinking. Fourth quality is action is its elusiveness. As every igniting flash connects to our conceptions with the cosmos, so each action should strike like a flash sword. Sixth quality of the action is its lawlessness. Only the consciousness of the fundamentals of the world's evolution will advance the modern immutability. The seven equal, well complained, the actions of the body and those of the spirit. Because, after all, that has been said, the action of thought is not appreciated. The inner quality of expectancy is its growth intensity. With what could one best correlate this sign, if not with the evolution of the world? Such expectancy should penetrate. And upon entering a house full of restless people, say to them, look forward to the evolution of the world. Basically, all you can do, you know, whatever you're going through personally is, you know, others have gone through it in one way or another. You're not really unique. Although you may be unique in your driving habits. Okay. However, you're not so much in the grand scheme of things. And I guess that's where I'd like to end tonight's show. Thinking for yourself. I'm just contemplating here. Last few minutes of the program. There's not much more I can say. Prophet is a man who opposes spiritual foresight. Just as on the physical plane there is needed nearsightedness and farsightedness, thus simply one must understand the quality of farsightedness of the spirit. The prophet is a man who possesses spiritual foresight. But as on the physical plane there is a nearsightedness and a farsightedness, that simply must one understand the quality and farsightedness of the spirit. It would be absolutely the height of ignorance to deny all prophecies. It would be absolutely stupid to condemn the prophets. If we significantly and impartially examine prophecies which have chanced to be preserved, what do we see? We find people who, disregarding personal advantage or disadvantage, have peered into a forthcoming page of history, were terrified and forewarned the people. Among known prophecies, one does not find selfish intents, but does not find a criminal self-intent. One does not find death slander. A difference in space and time. But all scholars find time to investigate policies, specifically to make historical companies. It would be a fine book for the young president to write. Yes, friends, it is time to learn to approach obvious manifestations culturally. Otherwise, future attachments will be to men, what elections are to cradle him? You are infants. What informs the togas? Do not conceal your timorous infancy. You will ask to determine your ranks and denomination. Verily, if you would be horrified to see the forefathers of our commitment, dwarfs of cupidity, attempted to screen the giants of the common will, and the radiance of the new world does not penetrate into your burrow, but let a whirlwind sweep away the roots which shroud the dawn. I think I'm going to end it here tonight. I'm a little bit tired myself, but there's much more to read on this passage of 5, but I don't think I can do more of it tonight. I really want to thank everybody for joining me tonight, and I hope you got something out of this program. Please refer to the Agni Yoga series or society, all right? And there, all of the books are printed, and there are, I believe, 13 or more books. And in those, there's such tremendous insight into the operation of the universe that I hope that you will see it, and I hope that you are seeing it tonight. And I want to thank everybody for allowing me to share this time with you. And join us tomorrow night when we have George Dixon on with us. Friday night with George Dixon, when we discuss universal consciousness, unity consciousness 2012, and fractal consciousness, which is what happens to me quite often, and so many people. So with that, I wish you good night, and